Well, it's one of those mornings, I guess. Today I'm going to talk about the three refuges. And I want to dedicate this talk to Katagiri Roshi. Every once in a while, things slip out of my files and land on my desk. I don't really know where they come from. I just thought, oh. I do remember getting this a long time ago, and I do have it tinned in front of my on the wall in front of my computer. I want to read it to you. It's so beautiful. All sentient beings are allowed to live and are, from the beginning, forgiven for living their lives in this world. Everything, whatever it is, has some reason why it exists. Evil, good, even something neither evil nor good. You cannot destroy devils just because you don't like them. Even though you don't like monsters, still, there is some reason why they exist. Everything is entitled to live in this world in peace and harmony, beyond our judgment and our evaluation. This is the first condition we have to realize. Everything is Buddha. Isn't that beautiful? So we're going to talk a lot about Buddha today. I think somebody tall made this. I started with homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So that's in praise of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So taking refuge, we sometimes call it the triple treasures. And taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is a fundamental practice in Buddhism. It transcends all of the different traditions. So it's a kind of a core expression of our devotion. And so what do we mean by taking refuge in the three treasures? It changes our in our practice and deepens it. It aligns us to our true nature that is beyond our personal and cultural beliefs. To take refuge is to find sanctuary, of course, a place of rest, protection, safety. You probably, each of us, have an idea what refuge means to you and where that sits in your body. I'm used to calling it our true home. In the morning, after I sit, I was given a practice, a service by my teacher. And it's very similar to the service that we do here on the precepts, which we will be doing after the new year, and is online in our chant books. And it starts out by doing the verses of contrition or atonement, or sometimes we call it confession. All my ancient twisted karma, born of beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, through body, speech, and mind. I now fully avow, I fully acknowledge, I fully let myself feel it. So for me, this is a very humbling verse. And actually, we say it three times. So you don't just hear it, but you actually embody it. And after every time I say it, you do a prostration, humbly admitting our limitations. We want to take responsibility for our thoughts, our speech, and our actions so that we can learn from it and make amends. Then, after this verse, after we do a full prostration to just let it go, humbly we admit our human limitations. And so when we do that, when I do that in the morning, when we do that in the service on the precepts, our hearts can open up. Our hearts can say, yeah, I, along with all beings, have this karma that I have to work with. And then we say the three refuges. Sometimes you can say, sometimes I've said the refuges like this. I think I learned it from Thich Nhat Hanh, but I'm not sure. With a pure heart, now that I've made my confession, now that I'm not holding back, now with my full being, a pure heart, I take refuge in the Buddha. With a pure heart, I take refuge in the Dharma. With a pure heart, I take Sangha. These are called the triple treasures or the three jewels, sometimes the gems. And I've chanted this many, many, many times in my life. And at first, when I first started to chant them, I took them kind of like, I take refuge in the historical Buddha and his life teachings. I take refuge in the teachings of reality, the truth of reality. And I take refuge in the community of practice. That ought to do it. And it did for quite a long time, decades. But now I'm asking the question, what do I mean? Now, after years of practice, what does taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha mean to me? And so often these words are just something I say to follow along in the service. So I wanted to take the time to talk today about what we are actually might be saying. Because our ancestors tell us not to take these teachings on faith alone. It is not good practice to just mindlessly say these words. So when I think of these, triple treasures, I think of the story in the Lotus Sutra called the wish, I call it the wish fulfilling jewel or gem. And I heard it very early in my practice, and I always was taken by this story. And I want to share it with you. So it takes place, Buddha's teaching his disciples. And in the process, he says, each of you will become a Buddha. Oh, they're very happy about this. They're pretty excited. Yeah, Buddha. And one of the disciples says, and now we're going to have the true teachings and we will all become Buddhas. And one of the disciples says, tells the story. It's like two nuns who are out drinking and having a good time. I kind of think maybe they've just done with shishin and decide, whew, did that. And they decided that at this point in their practice, they're ready to go out into the world, which was a very common thing to do, go out and into the community. And during the night, one of them particularly had a little too much. The other one, while the nun is sleeping, sews a priceless gem into the sleeve of their robes. But Because they had a particularly long way to go, they decided to leave early. And so when the nun woke up, she was surprised because her buddy had left. And they, but they'd already decided what they were doing, and on she goes. And the story is that for the one nun who leaves first, she has a very easy life. Things go very well for her. And she has a very meaningful existence. And the other nun hits a lot of resistance and hardships and really struggling just to get by, just to feed herself, and can't really have anything extra even to clothe herself. And after really years and years, they end up meeting each other again. And the one nun says, "How is it going? How have you been?" And notices that her friend really aged and was really her clothes were in tatters. And the nuns and the other nun says, "Well, it didn't go so well for me. I've had all this trouble and resistance." And goes on and tells her friend about how hard it's been. And the one nun just is flabbergasted and says, "I can't believe this happened to you and that you didn't know, but on the night that we partied, I sewed this priceless gem in your sleeve of your kimono. So that you wouldn't have this problem, so that you would always have this safety net for you. And you never found it." And the other nun was like shocked and surprised. And of course, realized, my problems are solved. Now I'll be okay. Now I won't go hungry. And that's the story. And sometimes the priceless quality of these teachings can escape us, just like that gem. We do our best, but we are still short of full awakening that the Buddha taught. We go around not realizing that the uncomfortable weight in our sleeve is actually the wish-fulfilling gem. So true. We look and look and look, and it's right here, right here. Reb Anderson said, according to Dogen, the essence of true transmission of the Buddha Dharma is taking refuge in the triple treasures. So how often did I just mouth the words but not really let in what was there, not really look? So, of course, this made me curious. The essence of the true transmission of the Buddha Dharma. Maybe I was glossing over something very valuable. I was not careful enough to look deeper. What am I saying? When I look at the surface, I read more carefully the verse of contrition, opening my heart in confession. Naturally, I want to look for sanctuary. Naturally, I feel the pain and suffering. I can feel helpless in the world, in the condition of the world today. But now I'm not going to hold back. I really want to put my whole being into this. Reb goes on to say that to take refuge in the Buddha, we are really taking refuge in the Buddha within us. That's a different take, because I always thought of Buddha as Buddha. But no, he's bringing him right in to our heart, which is now open after confession. In a way, thinking of Buddha being within me wasn't a new idea, but I had never really associated it with the three refuges. That gem that is secretly hidden in the folds of our being, our very essence. It's so easy to look for Buddha outside of ourselves. This Buddha within is not what you think you are. This is very important. Don't let this sentence go by you. What we think we are is often too small, too limited. And even if you have a really good opinion of yourself, it's really still very, very much a fraction of who you are. But when we take refuge in the Buddha, we take refuge in all of who you are, including Buddha. Can we allow that to happen? When I was on a trip to Japan, we were visiting a lot of gardens, and one of the features in the garden was a what they call them, I think they call it a moon bridge, moon viewing bridge. And it's kind of was fascinating for me to imagine. My imagination was kind of excited about the idea that you stand on this bridge at night. I think of our ancestors when the skies were actually dark and clear. And there you were personally standing on that bridge in your being and looking up into the heavens, into that Milky Way. And in a way, and then usually it's over water, a water feature, a pond or something. And then that's reflected right at your feet. The beautiful stars and the moons reflected and right at your feet. And there's this beautiful echo between your personal being and the universe. And I think of this as, in a way, kind of like the Buddha within. You're holding on to that railing, your feet are planted on that bridge, and you're dancing in the sky. All at the same time. So I take refuge in the Buddha within. Reb goes on to say another part of what you are is a human being running away from what you are. I think that's so true. It's worth looking into. So what are we running away from? Maybe it's the thoughts of who we think we are. Maybe it's the thought of feeling unworthy or unlovable. Or maybe it's the thought that I'll never be good enough. But also, sometimes it could be the thought we could be running away from knowing that we are actually part of this infinite universe. That could be really scary. It's so vast, so open. I remember my practice that, you know, you'd be meditating and then all of a sudden you'd have this little, and you'd pull back and you couldn't actually stay there. Maybe we think it is better to run away, better to live in poverty, better to live in a small world that seems safer. But this safe world is always falling apart. It's always changing. It's the very opposite of sanctuary. Where do we go? What do? We get distracted by our ideas of who we are. We have this history. We have our stories about who we are. We have our expectations of where we want to go and what we want to be. We have our personal project, me. And that keeps us pretty busy. But Buddha taught that the idea of me is delusion. It offers us a lifetime of projects, but none of them fills our searching heart. And so we continue, returning to take refuge in the Buddha. We take refuge from the running away. Can we do that? Something. Can we take refuge and rest from our agendas, our ideas, our project of transforming into the person that everyone will like or is a superstar of some kind? Taking refuge in the Buddha is you being fully you, including Buddha. Taking refuge in Buddha is aligning oneself with the true nature, which is all of who you are. What is aligning ourselves with? The precepts. But sometimes we forget and we get distracted with our busy minds. And we come back and take refuge. Sometimes we get distracted with thinking something like, I want to attain something like Buddhahood. We have something to work towards, being Buddha. But taking refuge in the Buddha is not taking refuge in something out there, some idea. Just as the Dharma is not out there, nor even the Sangha, which was a little harder to wrap my head around. Thich Nhat Hanh plays a lot with the refuges. And another refuge verse that he offers is, I take refuge in the Buddha within. I take refuge in the Dharma within. I take refuge in the Sangha within. What does that mean? How does Sangha live within us? When we look at the three refuges this way, they are not just ideas that are separate from us, but they are, in fact, our life. They become alive. In every choice we make, it is rooted in the refuges. You being all of you, being Buddha. When we take refuge, we are outside of our small me. From this place, we can wholeheartedly meet the lived moments of our everyday life. When we practice in this way, we're moving in the direction of peace and ease. You might not even realize it, but slowly and quietly, we transform our life in the direction of peace and ease. So I've been talking a lot about Buddha, and I think it was really helpful for me to start with Buddha, because when I did, I had a little purchase on what I might mean to take refuge in the Dharma and the Sangha. The three refuges are interlinked. There are different expressions of the same thing. As you take refuge in Buddha, you stop running away from your life. And you can see how we're all interconnected, just like the teachings say. And we can see how people depend on us. And naturally, we want to show up. Sometimes we show up in big ways, and sometimes we show up in small ways. This showing up created this space. People who didn't even know you pulled together and created a place for us to be, to share the Dharma, to sit together. People have, in fact, been showing up and passing on the teachings, transmitting it, taking care of it. For 2,500 years, people are showing up. And today, we're showing up. Today is us. We can see how we make a difference. To take refuge in the Dharma, we enter the flow that brings nourishment, not only to our lives, but to the lives of other people. As your practice brings you joy, you bring joy to the world. We cultivate compassion and understanding through this interaction. And we are part of that. When you walk in the world this way, you're also nourishing the Sangha, the community of practice. I kind of love that Thich Nhat Hanh, when he talks about Sangha, he includes the monks, the nuns, the lay people, but he also includes the cushions that you sit on as Sangha, or walking meditation, or doing the service, or daily mindfulness. He includes the trees, the skies, the birds, the grass, the walls, the fences. We chant that. It's Sangha too. So we take care of it. When we live taking care, refuge in the three treasures, we build communities that live upright and are loving. That's something I want to be a part of. I don't know about you, but it gives meaning to my life. These in the service, when we use this here, it's a prelude to the precepts. So when we have confessed our, we confessed our human condition, let go of holding back, we enter into the refuge of the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, we're ready then, it says, to receive and actually hear and actually receive the precepts. That's when we actually can take it in. The precepts were established as guidelines for how to live in harmony within our Sangha, our communities. The refuges support us in practicing in community so that we can gently transform our habitual thinking. When we understand that the person we are talking to is Buddha, and that's everyone, not just the people we like or think the way we do, but when we know we are talking to Buddha, we become more careful how we talk. We become more careful about the way we talk and what we want to say. Of course, sometimes we forget. And then we can go take refuge in the triple treasures. We can wholeheartedly show up with joy and enthusiasm when our heart is light. And we can take care of this moment, this lived moment, the only moment that actually exists. When we start to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, we might just be hoping for a gem sewn in our robes. I spent many years doing that. I wish, wishing, wishing, wishing for something better. I was wishing for a safety net. Somebody help this troubled world. But as we do our practice, as we test the teachings in our lives, our understanding deepens. And in fact, we become the safety net. We become the gem. I want to also say before I end is, taking up the practice of looking at the three refuges and really giving meaning to those words is a devotional practice. I actually have never thought of myself as very devotional. I suppose sitting in meditation as long as I have, that is a devotional practice too, but I never really connected to it. But now I'm really into it. Totally into it. I see how beautiful and transformative letting go of myself and entering wholeheartedly into the practice can be. This last few weeks, I've been sewing a rakusu with one of the members who is going to be doing lay ordination. And I'm also sewing a rakusu. And the two of us, we bow and take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and then we sow in silence. And I had this incredible experience there, you know, with the light, and we're stitch by, every time you take a stitch, I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. And we're both doing that, but we're doing it in silence and we're doing it together. And I just had this incredible experience of, this is it. This is what I mean. This is what I mean when I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I'm living it right now. It was a powerful moment for me. If our devotion is total and we give ourselves over to the wonder and the unfathomable, the unattainable, after all, this is what we mean when we take refuge in the Buddha within. What do, it's beyond our knowing, beyond what we can comprehend. The ancestors tell us there will be a response. When we meet our life like that, we will get a response. This is the promise of our ancestors. If we devote our total being to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the teachings come alive in us, and we live in such a way that it in turn supports awakening in the whole Sangha. This gives my life meaning. Can't help but get excited about the idea of doing it all together. You know, in the Lotus Sutra, they say, if you read one word, if you hear one word of the Lotus Sutra together, you will see Buddha. You'll realize Buddha. And we all, when I was studying the Lotus Sutra, we all kind of ha 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 ha. See Buddha. But now I'm totally into it. You do see Buddha. We can see Buddha right here in our community, in our Sangha. We show up wholeheartedly, Buddha appears. So I'm going to end with the way I do the refuges in my service. I take refuge in the Buddha, trusting in our capacity to walk in the direction of beauty, truth, and deep understanding. I take refuge in the Dharma and the path of transformation. I take refuge in the Sangha, focusing my energy on building communities that dwell in mindfulness, harmony, and peace. Thank you so much. That's my talk.
If you're in the room, please raise your hand and I will bring the microphone to you. Please say your name before you offer your question or comments. If you're on Zoom, you can either type your name or write your question in the chat box, and Kay will either unmute you or read the question out for you.
Thank you. This is Mikio. And while I was listening to your talk, I was staring at this floor and just noticed something that I haven't really noticed before that much, is that growing up, I always thought fighting is not good. Don't do that. And then today, suddenly I just realized that there's been a fighter in me who protected me, supported me for all these years. I never got any thanks. I don't know how much more I can say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mikio, for bringing your whole self. And you can thank that fighter in you.
This is Gengo. When you were talking about the Sangha within, I found myself thinking about something I've been working with for the last month or two, thinking about those who have died, starting with the ancestors, with Dogen and Kazan, and then going into Roshi Kennet and Kendo Chisan, and of course, my beloved teacher, Kyogen, and my late beloved partner. And then it expands out from there to the people who are more troubling in my life. So I came up with five names, four of whom were suicides. So there's some troubling karma left from some of these deaths. And what I really see is that all of those people live in me. So allowing them in, finding ways to sit with that difficulty and also the sweetness and the joy has been a lot of what my practice has been for about the last couple months. And so when you first started talking about the Sangha Within, I started thinking about the committee. You know, that committee that lives in our heads that like has all these thoughts and like has to have meetings now and again to figure out what are we going to do next and all of that. And that's a different kind of Sangha, I suppose. You know, all those people who live within us, which who we sort of think of as being part of ourselves, whatever that self might be. But also really recognizing that I am not just who I think I am, right? And I really thought that that was a great thing to point out, mm-hmm. that there's all of these other people, some known and some not known, mm-hmm. who are part of my life and my existence in a lot of very, very real ways.
Thank you, Genka, for bringing that forward so people can hear it. Because really where I landed with it actually is all those beings, and as you say, unknown, known and unknown, is, I realized, is the Buddha within. That is the Buddha. Kind of going back to Katagiri Roshi's statement.
Down the row. Hi, this is Dio. I appreciated your story about sewing raksus with your future disciple. A year ago today, I became a disciple and I sewed this raksu. And I was just thinking about that practice, sewing a raksu. And I was doing Namu Kanzans for me, like not for the whole thing, but I do like for a good portion of it. That was my stitches, was Namu Kanzan Bosatsu, which is like, Namu is like honoring or taking refuge in. And so like, just like, I don't know. It's pretty cool. I have this garment that like, when I put it on, like it's imbued with this like, sense of refuge and compassion, and my mind can be anywhere, and then I put it on and I remember, like, it's just nice.
That's kind of I love the word that you used, imbued, mm-hmm. because it's not always conscious for us. We just actually become it. We become the Buddha teachings.
Yeah.
That's very sweet. Thank you.
Thanks for your talk, Fish. This is Onyo. I thought I would share a practice that I have in case it's useful for others, working with the three refuges. And actually with our bowing practice, mm-hmm. so devotional for me, so much humility, gratitude. And I actually have a practice most often when I'm bowing, but sometimes, especially when I'm feeling a little disconnected from those qualities, I will dedicate each bow to a quality to be thankful to someone or something in my life. So that's 18 wishes for gratitude and thanks. Each morning. It's really been beautiful for me. And one of those three triplets each time is usually I guess it's an expression of gratitude, but taking refuge in the three treasures. And the way that I typically work with that is, like you said, a very expanded view. So kind of Buddha nature, and then Dharma in terms of just the unfolding of my life each day, like everything that comes my way, can I just embrace it and be grateful and do it? And that is such a great way to start the day. And then Sangha with the non-duality of Sangha, the richness of everything that it is. Can I land in that each morning? So it's a practice that I have pretty much daily.
Cool. Yeah, I love it. You know, I'm kind of slow. I notice when I bow, doing the bowing practice as well, I'm kind of a little slow. And it's never changed, really. It's the first time, like I'll say, I take refuge in the Buddha or whatever it is you're up, but I'm offering. You know, it's just a word. It doesn't go very deep. The second time I do it, then I can really feel like I embody it. Reb Anderson or somebody, I think it was Reb, said the third time you do it, you actually live it, or you actually emit or radiate it, the quality, which I thought, oh, that's cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. So well, I can count the questions on my little abacus here.
Christine, thank you for your talk.
I'm so sorry. What was your name again?
Christine.
Christine, thank you.
I'm glad you're playing with the toys. I think it was Thich Nhat Hanh in a book I'm reading, and he said, Sangha, it has to be for people. And that just kind of hit me because I never really thought of it to that. I knew it was ambiguous. Like it's an ambiguous concept. And then that kind of helped, like, oh, okay. You can't just kind of, like, it is a group of people coming together. And that the four puts a little more intentionality into it. But then I think that I have evolved in, like, the Sangha is a community, any community. And so my question more so is, like, but there's the community of practice. So it may not just be a community, a place like where I work, or the grocery store, or like the people that I'm connecting with, but that more so that community of practice as being the Sangha and the intentionality in it, which I think gets to the four, that people are intentionally coming together for a purpose. And so I'm curious about that versus the community of practice versus community.
Yeah, well, ideally, and this is the challenge for lay practitioners, right? Because we go out into the world and we really have to be intentional ourselves to carry this practice into our life and what we're doing and the people we're interacting with. So I think when you're in a community, you can still carry that intentionality with you. But I think what I hear you saying is to really value what we have right here. Because there is an accountability. There is a kind of an agreeing that we want to live a full life. We want to live an intentional life. And we get that support here. But then we have to also be, I think that's what's so important about mindfulness, is we just take it with us and we come back and we come back and we come back. I hope that answered your question.
This is Myoi. Thanks for your talk, Fish. Just something you said about the Buddha within. When we sit and do Zazen and there's that non-thinking, and go, oh, I'm doing so great. I'm so great. And then all of a sudden you realize that you're thinking about that. And then, you come back to the I, and then you have a choice. At least that was my insight from your talk, that you can see that it's the Buddha within that you're coming back to. And the irony is that no thought was also the Buddha within. So that creates a non-duality.
Sweet.
Yep.
Thanks, Miori.
Thank you.
This part of the room has a lot of questions.
I'm Guy. Thank you for your talk. Who was it who said something to the effect that we should have admiration for all beings because, it takes a certain amount of courage just to get up in the morning and do something, like some kind of devotion to life energy and something to that effect. So there's a courage and a valor in that. And
there is.
Yeah.
Life isn't easy.
So even if we don't think that there's a shared purpose in our activities, at some level there is. Mm-hmm. There's this dedication to life and so on.
Or death. Life or death.
Thank you.
When we want something to be different than it is, right? Then it's not dedicated to life. It's dedicated to changing something.